You're listening to Trek FM.
This episode of To the Journey is brought to you by Audible.com. Offering more than 150,000 titles for your tablet, smartphone, and desktop. Support the show and get a free audiobook of your choice by visiting audibletrial.com/trekfm.
Hi, this is Robert Duncan McNeil, also known as Tom Paris from Star Trek Voyager. You're listening to Trek FM.
Maybe it's the journey.
To the journey.
Hello, everybody at home, and welcome. This is To the Journey.
To the journey!
I'm your co-host, Tristan Riddell, and with me, as always, is...
Charlene Schmidt.
And we are here to talk to you today about a new series, and you should be happy that we're bringing this new series, because Char and I are happy, and that is our favorite moments... from season one.
Yes, I'm very excited that we found another way to do a season-wide series because I had a great time doing the marathons, and so to kind of do the same thing with a twist, more happiness. Yes, very happy. Happy is the word.
Happy is indeed the word because it's so much fun to go back. It forces you to recollect. It forces you to remember. And now, obviously, we can't go back and watch every single episode of season one and say, like, oh, yeah, that moment and take our notes. We can't do that.
No.
Now, out of all the seasons, that would have been the easiest to do because there's only 16 episodes in season one.
Yes.
But as you, like, what I did was I just took a look at the list. And then try to remember from each episode, like, oh, what was that episode about? Oh, that's right. What happened in that episode? Oh, there was that exchange and that one time and blah, 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 blah. And it just, it forces you to go down memory lane. And hopefully with our recollections, it'll force you to go down memory lane. And hopefully it's a lane you want to be in.
Yes. And that said, even though, well, I did the same thing you did. I went to Memory Alpha and looked at the episode list and thought, what is the highlight from that episode? What did I find the most impactful or the most memorable? Sometimes it's funny, sometimes it's very dramatic and serious, but what really sticks out from each of those episodes, just in case we had duplicates, I still have a long list of episodes from season, or of memories from season one that I can just rattle off right here. So, you know, even though there's a limited number of episodes, there's still a lot of really good moments.
And what's really funny is that, like, when I was going through my episode listing and when I was writing down what moments I wanted to talk about and what I didn't want to talk about, there were specific moments that I didn't put in my list because I either knew or hoped you would put it in your list.
Hey, you know what? Turnabout's fair play. I did the same exact thing.
You're going to have some episode, like, you're going to have some moments that I wish I brought up. I'm going to have the same. And if there's any duplicates, hopefully we can come up with some new ones. I know between the two of us, we always have tons and tons of honorable mentions.
Oh, yeah.
I figured what we could do, because not everybody knows the episodes as good as we do. We'll talk about the name of the episode, the number of the episode, and also we'll set up the moment. So, like, listeners at home, we're not just going to jump into it and say, oh, yeah, you remember that time Chakotay was in that room with that person? You know, we're not going to do that to you. We're going to try to set up the episodes best we can. So, Char.
Yes, sir.
Put you on the spot. How about you give me, like, these are not necessarily in order of importance. How about you give me one of your favorite moments from season one?
You bet. Okay, these are not in any particular order, but I want to start off with Caretaker, just because it is episode one, season one, the very beginning. And you know what actually stood out to me first and foremost when I thought about Caretaker? This was unexpected of me, my brain, and I was kind of surprised at what I came up with, but check this out. Tom Paris bailing out Harry Kim at Quark's in Caretaker.
I was not expecting that in the least because...
Me neither.
The moment, like, even when you were opening your mouth just now, I was just like, oh, she's going to talk about the reveal of Janeway. That's going to be her moment in Caretaker. No, oh my gosh, I left that off of my list for you. How dare you not choose it?
Okay, I'm so sorry. Well, I'll tell you what, I'll try and make it up to you. I'm going to put my hands on my hips right now and reenact the reveal. You're just going to have to imagine, listeners. And then camera comes up to my face, Catherine Janeway.
Such the
I served with your father on the Albatani.
The slow tilt and crane up. Yeah, it's so perfect.
Anyway.
Anyway.
I'm sorry that wasn't it. I actually thought you were going to think that I was going to choose the speech at the end of Caretaker.
That was another one that I thought you were going to choose. Yes, absolutely.
I almost went there.
All right, so tell us. There. Now, I don't think we have to set up Caretaker too terribly much for anybody who's
not.
Listening here. I hope not as well. But how about you set up the scene for us?
Okay, well, fresh cadet Harry Kim is enjoying himself at Quark's for a little drink and just a little bit of leisure time before he reports for duty. And, of course, Quark, who is the bartender on Deep Space Nine, is trying to sell him just really cheap, stupid little, you know, fake jewelry type trinkets. And just at the point where Harry's about to give in and just basically give Quark all of his money for a bunch of crap, Tom Paris walks in, saves the day, and works his magic to bail Harry out. And of course, the scene ends with, "Didn't they warn you about Frankie and the Academy?"
"How much for the entire trip?" "Cash or credit?"
"Dazzling, aren't they? As bright as a Colladen diamond."
"Brighter.
Hard to believe you can find them on any planet in the system."
"That's an exaggeration."
"You know, there's a shop at the Volnar colony that sells a dozen assorted shapes for one Cardassian lamp. How much are you selling these for?"
"We were just about to negotiate the price."
"Come on."
"Thanks."
"Didn't they warn you about Ferengi at the Academy?"
And I love that as a callback because Kim put his foot in his mouth and said, "They warned me about Ferengi at the Academy." Do you realize how offensive that is? And I love that, of course Quark wasn't offended, but he's going to use that.
Oh, but he was.
Well, no, I don't think he was offended. I think he was just acting so that he wanted Kim to think that he was offended so that he would get in trouble. And so that he would be forced to do exactly what he was about to do and buy the entire tray. And I just love how Quark is just like, "Really? Who is slurring my people?"
Yes. Yeah. "Which professor is denouncing my name? What's your name, son?"
Yeah, exactly. It's like, "Harry Kim." "Harry Kim." He's typing.
Yes. Yeah. Or actually, no, he says, "Kim. What was it? First name or last name? Are you..." So, I don't know. "You have one, I presume," or something like that. Yeah. I kind of forget.
So absolutely perfect. Yeah, that's it. And this is such a great introduction because I love this moment as you do. And I love this moment because this is the passing of the torch. This is the current to the new. This is Deep Space Nine to Voyager. And this shows you what type of character Harry Kim is. And it shows you what kind of character Paris is. It's like Harry Kim is green, doesn't know the way of the world. And is just fresh out of the academy and ready for an adventure. He thinks he's ready for an adventure, but he's not. And then Paris is the street smart kid who knows the tricks because he's probably done a few himself.
Right, exactly. Yeah, and this moment I think sticks out, not just because it's the passing of the torch, but there is that, definitely. But then also, this was the start of a friendship that lasted the entire series.
Yeah, and this was a start of one of the best relationships in Star Trek and one of the most developed relationships in Star Trek. And it's one of my favorites.
Yeah. Oh, I love me some Tom and Harry, especially with holodeck time.
Yes. You can't get any better in the holodeck than Captain Proton and Buster Kincaid.
I really don't think you can. So, you know what? Honestly, I would want to be their friends just so I could join them on the holodeck.
Right.
If I were on Voyager.
And also, I think it would be fun to see everything in black and white, like see yourself and people in black and white, not just watch a black and white movie.
Wouldn't that be weird?
It would be really weird, but I think cool at the same time. I think it would be disorienting.
I think at first it would have to be just because we're so used to seeing in color.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Anywho.
Anyway, interesting speculation, but I'm dying to know now what your first pick is, so spill it.
Well, you started at the beginning. I'm starting at the end. I am going to episode 116, Learning Curve. And I like this episode. I don't necessarily like the acting in the episode. I don't think the guest actors were very strong. But it follows a bunch of Maquis crewmen who are not fitting in Voyager whatsoever. They're getting their jobs done, and they're competent officers. No one's arguing that. They just don't like following the rules. They like doing things their way. And so Tuvok tries to take them under his wing, and things don't go very well. And they don't, you know, they walk out of the training sessions. They don't take it seriously. And then Chakotay, you know, he has to come in and bend a few noses. And so the scene that I absolutely love, and the moment I love, is when Chakotay comes in to the mess hall and then punches Dalby right in the face.
Look, Commander, you know as well as I do that we're used to playing with a different rule book. There's the Starfleet way, and there's the Maquis way.
And you want to do things the Maquis way?
That's right. That's always worked for us.
That's the Maquis way too, isn't it? And if you want to keep doing it the Maquis way, that's fine with me. We can do that tomorrow, the next day, every day until you report to Lieutenant Tuvok. You understand me? What? How does a Starfleet crewman answer a question?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, a good old smack in the nose.
And my favorite part is, he just says, he's like, oh, you want to do things the Maquis way. And he punches him and then picks him up and then slaps his face a little and says, you know, like, I can do this today, tomorrow, and the next day until you start doing things, until you report to Lieutenant Tuvok, as you just heard. And it's just so, I want more of this. I wanted more of this kind of Chakotay where he doesn't mind bending a few noses. And,
yeah.
You know, it's, I mean, he doesn't have to punch people, but I wanted to see a little bit more of a gruff and tumble Chakotay.
Yeah, I like rough and tumble Chakotay. I wouldn't have minded a little more Maquis discipline, if you want to put it that way. But yeah, that was kind of an unexpected moment because Chakotay really can be a very calm guy. But when he boils over, boy, does he let it go.
Yes, he does. And I would have liked to have seen that temper a little bit more where...
Mm-hmm.
He's very gentleman, you know, he has that piercing gaze, and like even B'Elanna said, he's just like he, all he said to me was that I hurt him with that puppy dog look or however she described it. But the thing
yeah.
is like, he's not afraid to explode, and you can just see he's that type of man who's very gentle. But then when the moment calls, he'll explode with anger or violence or whatever the occasion needs.
Yeah. And I think, honestly, this was a very good demonstration of, oh, you want to do things the Maquis way? This is the Maquis way, are you sure?
Yeah, exactly.
I like it. Okay, well, I got to scratch an honorable mention off of my list. I had this on here, too, because I also like a good old knuckle sandwich.
So was this on your list or in an honorable mention?
An honorable mention.
Okay, well, good. Well, how about you give us another one that's on your list?
Okay. How about in episode 1.05, which is The Cloud... where Janeway is searching around in the mess hall for coffee, and she ends up with Neelix's better-than-coffee substitute.
I was hoping that you would bring that one up.
Fine. Give me your even-better-than-coffee substitution.
And how about some Takar lager headaches with that this morning?
Just coffee.
It's a tiny bit richer blend than you're used to, but you'll learn to love it.
Bridge to Janeway.
On my way. Janeway out.
How can I not? This is all about coffee. And that look on Janeway's face as the very thick liquid pours into her cup. Just pure, like, shock and utter dismay. I love that moment so much. Plus, then you follow it up later on, just a moment later, with there's coffee in that nebula. And that just kind of cemented the fact that I love this captain.
Yeah, that whole coffee routine in that episode. And also, fan correction here, The Cloud was episode 6.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So I didn't want the fans online to jump down your throat.
Yeah, please don't send hate mail. Please.
I
just misread.
And here's one thing about that scene. One thing that happens all the time in television, and this is such a shame, is that as time goes on, episodes get shorter. And
mm-hmm.
the reason why episodes get shorter is because they get more expensive to make, and so they have to pack in more commercial time. And the problem with airing old episodes of TV is that they have to be re-edited for time. Television has to be re-edited for time. Now, I understand if movies have to be re-edited for time and commercials, fine.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that TV is edited for time just kills me. It just pains my heart. And this was one scene that when Star Trek was rebroadcast, this was well after 1995. This was in the 2000s. I was watching it while I was on TV. And they cut out the part where Neelix downs the coffee, his better than coffee substitute, and then shakes a little bit. They cut that out of the rebroadcast.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I never knew that. Oh, that's a shame.
And like they did that all the time with Star Trek, and they still do it. And so I hate watching it on TV because there's like, because you and I and every other Star Trek nerd knows the episode so well.
Yes.
That we know when one line is out of place, one shot, one scene, we're just like, hey, put that back.
Yeah, very much. Okay, I'm kind of glad that I'm not going to see this on TV, because on Netflix, as far as I remember, we're still good there.
Yeah, that's the beauty of Netflix, the beauty of DVDs and Blu-rays. Everything is maintained.
Sigh of relief.
Sigh of relief.
Well, what is your second pick?
My second pick is... this is something that's very important to me, and it's a very quick moment. It takes place in episode 115, Chitrell, and you know my feelings about Chitrell.
Yes, you love Neelix.
I love Neelix, and I love that episode. It's one of my top five episodes of Voyager of all time, and my favorite moment is the very last moment. So those of you who don't remember the episode, Neelix is from a world that was decimated by what was called the Metron Cascade, and many of his loved ones were vaporized within a second. And Jitrell, the alien who, like the alien on the ship, was the alien who was responsible for developing the Metron Cascade. And Jitrell was trying to find a way to bring some people back. As impossible as that sounds, he was trying to bring some people back, and he almost did it. But he couldn't, and the reason why he was trying so quickly is because he was dying of a disease that was caused by the Metron Cascade. And Neelix just, for obvious reasons, he hates this person. Out of all the reasons to hate someone, this is a reason to hate someone. He killed his family indirectly, yes. But still, he did it. And so in the very last scene, Jitrell is dying. There's nothing that he can do to save him. And Neelix goes up to him and says one of the three most beautiful words in the English language, and that's, I forgive you.
Maybe the cascade was a punishment for all of us. For our hatred. Our brutality. There's something I need to tell you. I tried to tell you before, but... what is it? I want to tell you that I forgive you.
Yes.
Think about how monumental that is. Think about, this is a man who deserves to die for his crimes. And this is a man who ruined the lives of millions, including Neelix, someone who we care about. And Neelix doesn't owe him anything, but on his literal deathbed, Neelix says the only words that he wants to hear, and he didn't have to. He didn't have to. No one was forcing him to do it, and he told him, I forgive you. Now, I'm a spiritual man. I'm a religious man, and so I know firsthand the power of forgiveness, but you don't have to be spiritual or religious to feel the impact of this moment.
Right. And you know what I find interesting about that scene? I think it can be interpreted, well, maybe several ways, actually, with the whole I forgive you. I think you could interpret it that he really does forgive Jitrell, and he's saying I forgive you to him. But I also think it's for Neelix. He's not saying it just for Jitrell. He's saying it for himself. He's coming to peace. He's coming to terms with what happened. And so I don't even think it's so much for Jitrell as it is for him, Neelix.
And I think that's the beauty of it. I mean, it's great for both parties. And I was raised to believe that hatred and grudges are like an extremely heavy backpack. Is that, you know, like unless you set it down, you're going to be carrying it for the rest of your life. And
I agree.
forgiveness was great for Jatrell, and it was great for Neelix because he was able to let it go, which is a very hard thing for me to do and a very hard thing for a lot of people to do.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I think it's something that we can all relate to.
And so that was one of my favorite moments of season one.
Very good choice. I figured I would leave Jatrell to you because I knew you were going to pick something from there. So I actually left that entire episode alone.
Well, you chose correctly. But how about you give me your third choice?
Okay, how about in episode 1.07, where Kes is helping the Doctor realize that he deserves to be treated as a person in Eye of the Needle. So to set up the scene for you, there's
No, it's not Dalby, but it's like that random crew member who, because Dalby's from Learning Curve.
Oh, you're right. Okay.
It's that random crew member who just loves to talk about working out.
Right, yeah. He's playing tennis, or he's got tennis elbow, and he can't stop working out because he's so stir crazy. But in the midst of his treatment, he's treating the Doctor as if he's not even really there. He's talking strictly to Kes, and basically kind of even questioning the Doctor's competence, asking, if I needed surgery, would he be the one performing the operation? And the Doctor kind of just, yeah, takes it and, well, yeah, of course I would. I'm the one who's qualified to do it, yada, yada, yada. And then after he leaves, Kes says to the Doctor, did you notice how rudely that crewman treated you? And the Doctor just kind of, well, that's every day in life for me. That's no big deal. And it ultimately, Kes kind of helps him and Janeway realize that the Doctor needs to be acknowledged as more of a person.
Yeah.
And so I think it's a very, I mean, it kind of sets the Doctor on his path for his whole arc, actually, of becoming more than the sum of his programming. And so it's got this big impact, this one little thing that Kes did, and look at what became of it.
If I had to get treatment for something serious, if I needed surgery, for instance, would he be performing it?
Of course, and quite expertly, too.
I don't know. I'd have to think twice about that.
Fine. And if you were lucky, you wouldn't die on the table while you were making up your mind. That should do it. How does it feel?
Not bad. Thanks.
Doctor, did you notice how rudely that officer treated you?
No more so than most.
You mean others act that way too?
Let's just say I've become accustomed to being treated like a hypospray.
Yeah, this was the beginning of a fantastic journey that we had with his character. This was the, like, if you could pinpoint a beginning, this is it.
Yeah.
And this is where he, not only becomes more self-aware, but he establishes to others that I deserve to be treated in a way. Like not even just for the sake of human decency, but also out of necessity. I'm the best you're going to get. I am the chief medical officer on this ship, whether you like it or not.
Yep, deal with it. What's so funny is that we go from this doctor who pretty much just gets used to taking a daily beating and being ignored or insulted or what have you to a rather kind of egotistical person. I mean, he thinks very highly of himself by the end of Voyager's run.
It
actually progresses pretty quickly. I'd say by season three, even, especially by the time he gets the mobile emitter, he's feeling pretty good about himself. So this is a major transformation.
Feeling footloose and fancy free, even.
Indeed. What's your next pick?
My next pick is a little bit more, I can't say humorous side. Well, it could be considered humorous, but it's also about a dire situation. And that's in episode 1.05, Phage. And it's that in this episode, Neelix gets his lungs removed in an instant. And obviously, he can't breathe. And so they send him to sickbay, and they oxygenate his body through different means. And the EMH has a genius idea of putting in holographic lungs. And so unless they can get his original lungs back, they are screwed over, and he has to exist in a chamber.
Like a little, I think the bio bed.
Yeah, like the bio bed with this little chamber on top. And he can't move within, like, 2 microns or something like that. He has to be destabilized. And the reason why I like this moment is because his, some of the first words out of his mouth is, he's like, oh, so I'm going to stay here forever? Well, I hate to break it to you, but your ceiling is hideous.
If I'm going to be in here a while, now's as good a time as any to tell you. Your ceiling is hideous.
I didn't design the room. I just work here.
Something with a bit of color would help. Maybe a nice tapestry or a painting. Could you dim the lights a little?
I'm a doctor, Mr. Neelix, not a decorator.
And some music would be nice. But better yet, are you programmed to sing?
Right. That is a great moment, because of all the things you could possibly say, you get this pretty much just life-altering news, and all he can think about is, I have to stare at this for the rest of my life. Well, that's great.
Yeah. And
but it's very Neelix.
That's the thing. It's very Neelix. Like, I'm glad that you said that, because this is a character-defining moment. This is five episodes in, and we don't really know Neelix that well, but if there could be one aspect of Neelix that we could focus on is, this guy got his lungs removed. He's looking at never, like, getting out of the bed again. And immediately he talks about the decor of the room. That is
right. Neelix. Which he does talk about a little bit later, doesn't he? Where he's giving suggestions for spicing things up around Six Bay.
Yes. Like, you know, as we heard in the clip, it's, you know, he talks about, he said, it's like, maybe you could bring in a tapestry or a painting. And then also that ending line that I absolutely love, this was kind of some foreshadowing. And he's like, and some music would be nice. Or better yet, are you programmed to sing?
I forgot that he said that.
Yeah.
Hey, maybe he planted that bug into the doctor.
I think so. I think so. Hey. Because if you know anything about the doctor, not only does he love medicine, but he loves the sound of his own voice, especially when he's hitting notes.
You know it.
You know it. All right. Well, what's the next one on your list?
Okay. I'm going to stick with Phage, actually. Ooh. And go to a different scene. And this is a more dramatic moment rather than a humorous moment. And that is where Janeway is basically kind of giving a little bit of a speech to the Vidians. It's where she's talking about how really she has no one she can turn to. They're all alone out here. She can't turn them over to Starfleet. She can't keep them as prisoners in the brig for the rest of their journey. And so all she can really do is let them go and stay the heck away. And she has that wonderful line of, any actions taken against this ship will be met with the deadliest of force.
I can't begin to understand what your people have gone through. They may have found a way to ignore the moral implications of what you're doing, but I have no such luxury. I don't have the freedom to kill you to save another. My culture finds that to be a reprehensible and entirely unacceptable act. If we were closer to home, I would lock you up and turn you over to my authorities for trial. But I don't even have that ability here, and I am not prepared to carry you forever in our brig. So I see no other alternative but to let you go. Take a message to your people. If I ever encounter your kind again, I will do whatever is necessary to protect my people from this harvesting of yours. Any aggressive actions against this ship or its crew will be met by the deadliest force.
And, I mean, she's so very incredibly dramatic of it, but I do like the situation, because it is a reminder of just how difficult it is for this lone starship out there, mm-hmm. how far away they are from home, and these incredibly difficult situations that they're going to have to deal with the whole way through. I mean, Janeway has a very tough task at hand, and this is, I think, one of the first really big kind of problems, dilemmas that she faces.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this was a nice peek into the future of the problems that they face that is unique to Voyager, that wouldn't be to Deep Space Nine or the Enterprise. Because she can't just drop them off at the nearest starbase. She can't hand them off to somebody else. And resources are limited in the Delta Quadrant for this starship. And they can't just house and feed two people that aren't contributing, you know, to the ship. And it just, nobody really thought about it until this moment. And she has to let him go. And the guy's smiling ear to ear because he's a jerk and evil. Mm-hmm. And like, or what you could call ears on his face. And it's just, yeah. And so, like, some people might see this as a weakness, but this was a supreme strength in Captain Janeway. She was willing to let them go because it's what she had to do.
Right.
Not what she wanted to do.
Certainly not. And you can tell with the emotion that she's discussing, or with the emotion that she's talking, that she really hates the fact that she has to do what she has to do here.
Yeah.
But, yeah, what else is she going to possibly do? So,
exactly.
Yeah.
Good moment. Good moment.
Good moment. What's your next one?
Well, my next one is going back to the beginning, which we've already talked about before, in Caretaker, in episode 101. Or I guess, actually, you could call this 102. This is, towards the end, this is the battle between the Kazon and Voyager and their array.
Okay.
And the moment that I really love, it's not like one line or you know, a couple lines or anything like that. It's the moment where Chakotay decides to ram the ship into the Kazon, ram his Maquis ship, the Valjean, into the Kazon ship. And this Kazon ship is a behemoth. It's gigantic. And it's Chakotay sees Voyager and he's like, their weapons are hit. And so he tells Torres to get off the ship. And the reason why I like this moment is because this is that moment that we were talking about. This is him punching one of the crew members out. This is that moment where he's going to take matters into his own hands.
Paris, my crew is coming over. Tell one of your crackerjack Starfleet transporter chiefs to keep a lock on me. I'm going to try and take some heat off your tail.
I'm holding a lock on him, sir, but he's getting too close. I'm getting you out of there, Chakotay.
Not yet!
You're breaking up.
Stand by the transport.
Wait!
You know, like, you see this so many times in movies and TV where they're like, okay, I'm going to commit suicide for the mission. Don't you dare try to talk me out of it. I'm going to die for the ship even if I don't have to. I'm going to do it because it's the noble thing to do. He didn't do that. He said, he's like, okay, I'm going to ram the ship. You better get a lock on me.
That a boy, like, Chakotay.
Yeah, like, he, you know, he knows what he's doing, but he's like, are you crazy? I'm not gonna die for this. Just beam me out.
Yeah, you better be saving my ass on this.
Yeah, and I love that line where he says, he's like, make sure one of your crackerjack transporter chiefs.
Yeah, that was this, a great movie. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so that moment is one of my favorite in season one.
That's fantastic. But then the look he gives to the crackerjack transporter chief.
Yes.
Later on, they got me. I'm good. Thank you. Thank you for saving my life.
On the back. Yeah.
Yeah. Cute moment and a very good choice.
Very peppered XO.
Very peppered. Yeah. Gotta love that. And in leather.
All right. Well, we're coming up in the end. This is your last choice, right?
It is. And I'm going to take a little bit of a risk and possibly infringe on your territory here. Because it's a B'Elanna moment.
My last one is not a B'Elanna moment, so you are
footloose. Oh, well, okay, in that case, I'm so glad I'm covering this because it has to get in here. This is in 1.14 Faces, which is, which is the one where the Vidians split B'Elanna into two people, one fully human, one fully Klingon, and ultimately the two work together to get out of a Vidian prison slash experimentation area, whatever you want to call it, and get back to Voyager along with a little bit of a rescue party, which includes Tom Paris. And I'm going to, my choice is the moment where B'Elanna is telling Tom about her past in Faces.
Ah.
Where she talks about her childhood and how she always felt different and how she just never grew up feeling comfortable or right or accepted or anything like that. And it's the first glimpse of like how much her childhood shook her to the very core, which obviously we later know now with in hindsight just how much of an impact that has on her life. And this is important information that we're getting here. So on top of that, it's an emotional moment and it ends with that single tear down B'Elanna's face. And this is human B'Elanna, by the way, for those who don't remember. And the fact that it's with Tom, whom she ends up marrying years later, it only kind of sweetens that moment in retrospect. So I have to go with this one.
I grew up in a colony on Kesik 4. My mother and I were the only Klingons there. And that was a time when relations between the homeworld and the Federation weren't too cordial. Nobody ever said anything, but we were different. And I didn't like that feeling. Then my father left when I was 5 years old. One day he was there and the next he wasn't. I cried myself to sleep every night for months. Of course, I never told anybody. And then I finally decided that he left because I looked like a Klingon. And so I tried to look human.
I didn't even really think about that, about how it does sweeten the moment because Tom's there. And this is her first real moment of vulnerability that we see in the series.
Mm-hmm.
And that's such a good choice. And I'm really surprised that you didn't go with the moment where Klingon B'Elanna goes, "You killed Durst."
Well, you already got it in there for me, so we're good.
Oh, man, I love that moment. That's become, I think, one of the moments that we talk about the most, kind of like...
Not at all pleasurable.
And...
Prax.
Yes, we haven't done that in a while.
We haven't, and now I just did all three, and the listeners are just going to get bang, bang, bang on audio clips.
All the sound bites. Fantastic. Well, I'm glad that happened.
Well, I'm glad that you chose Faces. It's such a good episode, such an important B'Elanna episode, and really a tip of the iceberg on the character that is B'Elanna, and very well played by Roxanne Dawson.
Oh, absolutely. One of my favorites from season one, too. I think that's a fantastically written story. And, of course, very well acted. The teeth aside.
The teeth aside, yes.
Yes.
Now,
what is your last pick?
My last one is from episode 10, Prime Factors.
Okay.
And this is another moment that I'm picking a lot of moments that end the episode. And this is that moment between Janeway and Tuvok, where in this episode... This race has a technology that, in theory, should be able to bounce Voyager back home by basically jumping a couple hundred light years at a time, or a couple thousand. But the thing is, the government said, no, we're not going to give out technology. Janeway's like, okay, I respect that. We have the same policy. Thanks, you know, for nothing, but, you know, it's cool. And Tuvok and a group of people go behind her back, as well as the creepy pleasure guy's back, and gets the technology, but it ends up not working, and they get found out and getting yelled at Janeway. And at first, Taurus is going to take responsibility, but Tuvok's like, I'm the senior officer, it's cool. And they kick Taurus out, and then Janeway explains to Tuvok, listen, I can't understand why you would be responsible in this. And she talks about how he's her moral compass, and what is she going to do if he betrays her trust like that? And we get this moment where it shows the history that they've had, the relationship that they have, and it shows us where this relationship could potentially go. Now, you and I have talked about this many times about how they just completely missed the opportunity of earning this relationship throughout the show. They completely forgot about it and tried to dig it up here and there, but not so effectively. But we didn't know that at the time. And so this was a fantastic captain... second officer moment, captain friend moment, and it was very Kirk Spock-esque.
I realize you made a sacrifice for me, but it's not one I would have allowed you to make. You can use logic to justify almost anything. That's its power and its flaw. From now on, bring your logic to me. Don't act on it behind my back.
You have my word. My logic was not in error. But I was.
Dismissed.
Yeah, that's a very interesting way of putting it. You're right, though. Just because, well, yeah, Kirk relied on Spock to be his moral compass, and Bones as well, just in different respects.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, Janeway has a lot of trust in Tuvok at this point in the series. In fact, she's probably the person that, he's probably the person that she trusts the very most. And as the series goes on, I think that changes over to Chakotay, but at this point, he's it.
Yeah.
And maybe, just maybe, the fact that he kind of did this whole thing, maybe that took her trust down a notch to the point where, once things started cementing with Chakotay, she decided to put Tuvok next in line.
Maybe. I mean, but maybe. there were a few Chakotay moments like that where he kind of betrayed the trust of Janeway and did what he wanted to do. But yeah, that your theory could be right.
Who knows? That might be a good thing for listeners to chime in, either maybe on the Babel conference or hit us up on Twitter. My handle is OTheProfanity.
And you can hit me up at the Insane Robin.
So let us know what you guys think about that. Well, season one's moments on Voyager aren't the only thing that we've been talking about here on Trek FM this week. And so here's a little glimpse at what else is happening on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
And so I was biased against it. Even when I started buying the two-disc collector's edition DVDs, I avoided buying any of the even-numbered movies.
Odd-numbered movies.
Earl Grey.
Like they stated in the end of the movie, they thought he'd outlive all of them. And I'm like, yeah, that's what should have happened. We should have seen Data, like, in the, 26th century, like, Data 5.0, whatever we call him.
To the journey! You don't know if she's going to stab him or smooch him.
She's going to smooch him, of course. After dessert.
After dessert.
We all know what dessert means.
Warp 5.
Along with technology and along with trying to study the origins of a lot of different things that we've come to know in the original series and beyond, it's hard to try and deconstruct it without insulting what has come in all of the things that we know of being Vulcan mind meld.
Mission Log, a Roddenberry Star Trek podcast.
And my thought was, in the next scene, Crusher should have the body of the dead Klingon sitting on the back of her toilet holding a candle. Which she would only get to do after Lieutenant Yara's gotten to hold the dead Klingon up to her ear to see if she can hear the ocean.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
Everything you would imagine would be in an opening title sequence for this show is in there. I think the shot that really does it for me, the shot that really pulls everything together, is when he dunks the basketball.
Melodic Treks.
So we do know an awful lot of people get associated with Vic Fontaine. He name drops to the nth degree about all the famous people that he hung around with. One of whom is Frank Sinatra.
Axanar, the official podcast.
When there's a possibility for something to be misunderstood or not clearly explained, it can potentially open up a big hole for a show, because people can end up going down a path that was actually not what somebody wanted to be done.
The 602 Club.
What are those Bond movies that you go back to time and time again because they just do it better?
First of all, Matthew, nobody does it better.
That's true.
It makes me feel sad for the rest.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all of our shows. We're available on so many platforms, and none of them would be possible at all without the help of a sponsor, and so let's hear a little bit about that.
Our sponsor for the show is Audible.com. Audible is a great way for you to read all the books you've always wanted to, but never thought you had the time for. Audible is the premier source for audiobooks, with more than 150,000 titles to choose from, and new titles coming every week. From classics to current bestsellers, Audible has something for everyone. You'll be happy to hear that both Mosaic and Pathways are available from Audible. As a Trek.fm listener, you can get a free audiobook of your choice along with a 30-day trial to see just how great Audible is. Just go to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up today. Again, that's audibletrial.com/trekfm, and we thank you and Audible for supporting To the Journey and Trek.fm.
And aside from a sponsor, you out there can help us out and support the show. There's a few ways that you can do that. The first is to write us an iTunes review. So we have three people to thank for writing us iTunes reviews in the U.S. iTunes store, and those people are Belicio1, BanditQuest13, and GeekFilter. We have them to thank for giving us an awesome rating and writing us a review, and if you haven't done that, we would definitely appreciate it because that helps other people find the show, and the more the merrier. Also, if you haven't checked out patreon.com/trekfm, there are some cool little perks there for you if you decide to become a monthly subscriber. The perks vary based on how much you are willing to subscribe for every month, and so check that out. It's patreon.com/trekfm. Now, before we go, we have an interesting little thing. One of our listeners did a little bit of work for me, which was very nice. I mentioned a couple of weeks ago that I wanted to count how many Voyager episodes had one-name titles. And one of our listeners named Helen did the work for me and came up with the following. Here's how she broke it down. 51% of all Voyager episodes have a one-word title. So right there, majority wins. Next up, with 31%, it's two-word titles. Three-word titles have 13% of Voyager episode title names. And then lastly, 6% of Voyager episode titles have four or more words. And as a side note, she counted two-part episodes as one episode, except when it was in two seasons. So Basics 1, different from Basics 2. Future's End and 1 and 2 are the same, if that makes any sense. So thank you very much, Helen, for taking on this task and letting us know the results. We really appreciate it.
But one more thing before we close out, and we have to talk about this because we promised the listeners, out of everyone who wrote in about our episode title, a couple of episodes ago, we wrote an episode, a Chakotay-based episode, on the fly with no prep whatsoever, and you and I had a little disagreement on what it should be called. I came up with the simplistic and, I think, elegant choice of Decisions, and you came up with the overly complicated Dissonance. But, you know, whatever, that's fine. That's fine. But, you know, I think the people had some differing opinions, and 30% voted for my title Decisions, but a whopping 70% voted for Dissonance.
Well, the people have spoken. That's and obviously right. They like more eloquent and complicated sounding titles because they sound far more, deep and intriguing than they really are.
They like their coffee shop words.
Very much.
But we did have two interesting write-ins, and we had one person who suggested their own episode title labeled Deliciousness. And
honestly, maybe not for this episode. It would be a good title, but I would like to see a Star Trek episode titled Deliciousness. I don't really care what it is, but that would be fantastic to see that on screen.
This would have been a good Neelix cooking episode.
Deliciousness. Or maybe Chakotay's Behind. I know that there's several female ladies in the audience who would just take that little screen grab from Tattoo and play it for 45 minutes, and that would be Deliciousness.
I'm sure that's probably the root of where this term, where this episode write-in came from, because
maybe
this was a Chakotay-centered episode. But we had one other write-in, and I thought this was pretty clever. Trials and Tribulations.
Yes. I know who sent this one in, and that was pretty freaking clever. Well done. Well done.
All right. Well, there you have it, listeners. From henceforth, the episode that we wrote on the fly shall be known as Dissonance.
Done and done in the books. All right. Well, I think that wraps it up. What are we going to do for next week?
Next week is going to be an episode that is going to be very near and dear to Char and I. This episode we're kind of dubbing Voyager Therapy, and it's talking about how Voyager got us through the tough times, because as Star Trek fans, we often run to Star Trek, or Voyager in particular, to get us through those tough times. When we feel like we don't have any friends, we feel like we have a friend on that bridge. Or when we don't know how to handle a situation, we see what Janeway would do in this situation. And we go through those times, and those moments help define us. And that's what Char and I are going to talk about next week. But you'll have to wait if you want to hear it. So until then, this has been To the Journey.
To the Journey!